I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I think, but then when you've got two people, right, and then someone who's the handbrake, like it plays on that, like he would go 100%, 110, and I'm like still holding at 80%. So it's that finding that middle ground. And with me, you just need to massage the idea and it takes time, whereas he's ready to go right away.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Sham, and in this episode, we're back with the remarkable Jeanette Lopez, a HR professional at Samsung, and Moses Nakia, a technical product owner. Get inspired by their bold steps into property investment and the lessons learned along the way, from strategic leveraging of cash flow to navigating challenges with agents and tradespeople. To start, they share their timelines of their first property acquisitions, reflecting on the significant life transitions surrounding their investments.
Jeanette bought her first property in 2010. And I bought my first property in 2012.
Okay. So 2010, 2012, where were you then? Were you already in Dubai?
Still living with mum and dad so that I can save. Finished university.
You just finished university. You were working.
Yeah.
At the time, I think you are George.
Yeah.
Okay. At the time, I was also working. So when I got my property as well, so we're both working. You are living at home.
Yeah.
Really? You've actually lived home until we got married. So.
I did the traditional thing and moved out once I got married, and also because it allowed me to save.
As Nakia recounted their property journey, he highlighted the initial motivation behind their purchases, emphasizing the focus on achieving the Australian dream of home ownership rather than embarking on a deliberate property investment journey.
So first property 2010 for her, my first property in 2011. But at the time, actually, we were not really thinking of going down the property investment journey, really, because at the time it was like, you know what, Australian dream, you know, be a homeowner. So, you know, buying a property was like, oh, you know what, I've done a big achievement, you know, like I own a property and, you know, you just pay off your loan. And one day you actually, the idea was actually when we were buying the properties, I think the idea was around actually moving in. So I remember we were just discussing or debating sometimes, like, oh, which one are we going to live in yours or mine, you know, that kind of thing. But initially that was the idea, like, okay, buy your property because, you know, like, you know, having your savings. And I think one thing that she didn't say before was because she started work so early, she had a bit of savings. So it was like, you know what, she has some savings sitting there. They're not really, you know, earning how much, you know, there's interest you get. But, you know, if you put that money in property, you know, you can. And I think your parents were encouraging you. At the time,
it's that typical get, you know, like you said, the Australian dream, bricks and mortar, right? Buy a property. And so that when you retire, you've got something like as simple as that.
Yeah. So, you know, putting money in there, savings, and saying like, you know what, I've got a property, you know, happy days. But I think with time, what started to happen is that we started to see, because like for me, for myself, some of my friends are interested in property. And one of my friends, actually a very good friend of mine, was like, hey, you know what, let's go and look for properties. And because he hadn't bought then, and he was actually looking to buy. And we used to go every weekend. We'd drive around Sydney and just go and open homes. We just go do inspection and we ask about the price. We get the brochures. And we did it, I think, for almost like 2 years. And we started to think like, you know what? This property price is actually changing every time we actually go out there. And I remember, you know, having a chat with Jeanette, and Jeanette was like, you know what, let's try and, you know, go and see these new areas where people are actually building, you know, like new areas around Southwest Sydney, like, you know, Oran Park and all those places, you know. Sydney was actually expanding, you know, these new areas where building is going on. And, you know, starting to think like, you know what, properties then, I know this sounds strange, but you could go in those places and find a property for 380K.
Yep, yep, I remember.
And at the time, we used to think like, wow, that's so expensive. It's a different story now. But, but you know, it was, that's how it was. Like, you know, you go out there and you are like, oh, you know, you look at a four-bedroom home sitting on a 500 square meter land and you're thinking like, wow, 380, oh, I don't know about that, you know? You know, but that's what it was. Like if you think about it now, and in the hindsight, you're thinking like, you know what? You should have just gone and, you know, collaborated with a lot of people and just get some loans and just buy those properties. And then right now you'd be sitting pretty, very, very pretty. But that's a hindsight.
The journey into property investment began with attending a seminar by Be Invested, igniting the interest and prompting them to delve into the world of real estate.
I think that's an entry for us, you know, starting to get interested in properties and looking at the numbers and that kind of thing. And I remember Jeanette once, so I don't know where you saw some that ad for those guys. Can't remember the name.
Be Invested.
Be Invested. We went to one of their seminars. And then they, you know, explained to us how they did their property thing. And you're like, wow, you can do that. And then we're like, okay, let's try and see how that goes.
We got educated, and particularly about the lending component of it, right?
Yes.
Because we were locked out. We've depleted all our savings for our first properties. And then like, we're like, but we're getting educated in terms of the property market. We're getting educated in terms of how to borrow. We just needed to execute. And so, because we were ready, we're like, let's buy the next one. So to start amassing property.
So understanding that, and also, you know, so what actually happened after that, you know, listening to one group or one property advisor talking about this is how you, you know, you go about your property and stuff. So what I actually started doing is like every single weekend, I would actually go out to different places, you know, different people talking about property. You know, there was conference all over Sydney, and I would actually drive to each and every one of them to try and actually understand, you know, what are people doing. And, you know, you start to see a trend. Once you start, you know, there's a lot of them that don't provide too much information. There's others who provide a lot of information, which is very useful. And then there are others who just want your money because they're telling you, oh, you know, you can invest in this place, and you find like they've got some kickbacks from the developers or whatever. There's lots of those. But at the end of the day, these are the places you go and get information. And after you get the information, you use that information to make an informed decision on what is really going to work for you and what is best for you. And I think for us, that was the most, most important thing, the information, the education of learning and understanding like how the whole game actually works.
The decision to engage a buyer's agent stemmed from a blend of apprehension and the allure of expertise, marking the beginning of the joint property investment journey. However, this was a learning curve.
When that started, and you know, we both had a property each, and then we used a buyer's agent to get our first property. And I remember one of the things that were really eating me up was...
You mean our third property?
First property together.
Yes.
First property together. So each one of us had gotten a property. Now first property together was using a buyer's agent. And the buyer's agent was like, okay, I'll try and find the best property for you that is going to give you some good cash flow in an area that, you know, has growth potential. And we think that this is going to be a really good property. And we said, okay, go ahead.
Why did you choose a buyer's agent rather than going buy it yourself? What was the reason why? Is it time restraints?
Yeti cats, first time, right? We're educated, but like, you know.
Yeah, but you know, it's a thing whereby you're convinced that, you know what, because like you speak to a buyer's agent and they tell you what they can do and you're like, wow, how did you know about that? And then we were like, you know what, let's give it a go, okay? But we gave it a go. And for me, and I think Jeanette understands that, the amount of money we had to pay them for them to get us that property really got me.
For the pleasure of them pulling out any property off of their spreadsheet, most likely, right?
And then when I was actually looking at this, like I remember one of the properties they gave us, I looked it up. I went to realestatecode.com. It was actually there. It was actually on sale. And I'm trying to figure out, I can do this. Right? The guy's gone, I don't know, like, and done some numbers, and they're like, they had a little spreadsheet which they'll do. They show you your cash flow, you know what, this is the amount of outgoings, this is the cancel rates, this is how much you're going to pay for your stamp duty, this is whatever, this is how much you get for rent. And you do your thing, and you're like, okay, this is your cash flow, this is how much money you're going to get. Maybe in the first few years, you might be negatively geared, but later on, you're going to, you know, get your rental increases and all this, and then the growth area and all these things. This is the kind of structure and everything. And you're like, okay, great. I've got this spreadsheet. I can do this.
Mm.
So I started to kind of spend a lot more time online looking at these properties, but also attending these sessions that, you know, various groups and various property experts do every weekend around Sydney. So that actually got us more interested, and we started to move that direction. Now, when we paid for that first property together through a buyer's agent, they brought another property, second one. We did the same. And then we were like, nah, we should be able to do this one by ourselves. Now we can see the trend, because every single time they brought a property and we looked it up, you'll find it in domain.com or realestate.com. And I'm like, what's the difference? Like, what did they see in this property that I wouldn't pick? And then the more we looked into that, the more I looked into that, I was sort of convinced that, you know what, I can actually do this by myself.
Which is what you did.
And so we did.
Nakia took the reins of property research, discovering Queensland's allure for positive cash flow investments, leading them to their next property venture, marking a shift towards independent decision-making in their investment journey.
So the next property, I actually did my own kind of research and did my own kind of search across, you know, really at the time, actually, we just stay back. At the time, we were being told that, you know what, if you really want a positive cash flow property, you need to go to Queensland, because what was happening in Queensland at the time was that the property prices were much lower than in New South Wales and Victoria, and the rents were at par, kind of. So I will give you an example. If you find a property selling in Queensland for $220,000, you might find an equivalent property in Sydney selling for, say, $350,000. Okay? But guess what? The rents are exactly the same. So in Sydney, somebody will be paying $400 a week for that 350K property. And in Queensland, they'll be doing the same. They're paying $400 per week. So it makes sense to spend that 200K in Queensland and get that rent. And from a cash flow perspective, you actually be in a better position. And that's what we did. So the property that we bought together, whereby we don't involve buyer's agent or any advice from anyone, was that. We went to Queensland, bought a property that was good cash flow, and I was feeling like I'm a genius.
We've done it on our own. And if anything, it was about the lending component of it. That's and borrowing and not against holding our properties as collateral. That was the biggest.
Yes.
Realizing the disparity between common investment advice and financial reality, Nakia shifted his strategy towards positively geared properties, recognizing their potential for long-term financial growth and lending success.
I'm sure you'll agree to this. you know, the most common advices for the mom and dads to property investment, you know, like you might find like a family, you know, mom and dad being advised by the accountant, like, okay, buy this property, is negatively geared, you know, it's brand new, you claim all this, depreciation, blah, blah. No, I think a lot of the advice that people get is along those lines, because, you know, you claim depreciation, but when you do your proper taxes and the numbers, it actually doesn't. It doesn't. It never adds up. So I think from that perspective, we were like, you know what? I think this advice of making sure that your property is towards a positively geared section so that you have more cash flow and all that kind of stuff is actually going to make you move much far ahead than somebody who's doing depreciation and all that kind of stuff. So this started to drive us into that, even from a lending perspective, and that's very, very important. Lenders are always looking at your cash flow. They're looking at how much money comes in. So the more money that comes in, the better for you. You're in a better position to go and borrow. Okay? So very interesting.
As they navigated their property investments, both found themselves transitioning away from reliance on intermediaries like brokers and agents, opting instead to harness their own resources and knowledge to propel their portfolio forward.
So the buyer's agent connected us to a broker. So we were going to this broker and he was turning things around for us. And
Learn after learn. And I think,
So we did it. And then it got to a point whereby we're like, okay, this guy is asking us like, hey, why don't you go through this agent? And we were like, no, we can do it ourselves. And then we started to feel like, you know, they were kind of slowing things down. And obviously, for obvious reasons, because I think both of them, you know, if I go through the buyer's agent, he makes his cut. If I go through the broker, he makes his cut when the banks, you know, give them their commissions and all that kind of stuff. So, but when we started to do it by ourselves, this guy's like, but you are referred by the other guy. Why don't you continue using the other guy? We're like, no, we're making actually savings. By doing it ourselves, we're actually able to use our money and go to that next property. So the good thing is like, you know, equity harvesting. I think that's one thing that, you know, if your property has appreciated, there is a potential of you harvesting the equity and using as your next deposit for your next property. And for us, that was actually key because our properties here in Sydney were appreciating and we were able to harvest some equity and then we use that as the deposit for the next property. And that, you know, helped us to go to the next property. And if the next property has got a good cash flow, guess what? You can again do it again.
Taking control of their loan process, they shifted towards direct communication with banks, experiencing the highs of successful settlements with trusted contacts and the lows of ineffective brokers, emphasizing the importance of knowledgeable individuals in navigating the complexities of property financing.
What we did is we started now doing our own kind of, searching and looking for how can we get the best loan. So we're actually contacting the banks directly. All right. And one of the guys I remember at CBA, he was one of the mortgage guys at CBA, and he processed our loan. And he goes like, okay, guys, I think, you know, your loan is okay. Everything's good. And we really like this guy, how he handled the thing until settlement happened. And we were like, you know what, this guy, you know, we can use him in the future. What tended to happen after that, after this successful settlement, is we went to a different broker because for us at the time, we were just trying things out. We went to another broker. This broker just screwed up everything, honestly. He actually came back and told us we were not able to borrow. You know, the banks have declined and this and this and this. I was like, no, this is not possible. It was actually based on, I think this was our fifth property we were buying at the time. And this guy's like, no, you can't borrow. And I was like, nah, something's not right. I was like, I'll contact my guy at CBA. So I contacted this guy, gave out all the documents. He put in the numbers. He's like, Moses, you guys are good. You're good. You know, you've got enough, you know, savings. You've got enough money in your account. You got enough for paying for this and this and this. And when he put it in the system, everything came green. And I'm like, so what did this other guy do? And then later on, I came to learn what he had actually done. It's a separate story altogether. It comes to, you know, knowing those experienced players who know how to process your loans. And it's very important. I know a lot of people go out there and they say like, oh, banks are not accepting us. And they're either going to through brokers or friends or accountants, and they get blocked. And it's not that they're not, you know, there's a few things that, you know, that you need to tweak here and there to be able to actually unlock your potential. And if you get the right people, you can go far.
With the experience with your type of portfolio.
Exactly, exactly. So this guy, you know, within 2 days, the loan had been processed. And the following week, we just told the vendors that, you know what, this loan is going to go through. Please just prepare for settlement.
I got to get this contact off you.
We don't know where he is at the moment, do we?
What actually happened for us at that time is that this loan was processed and we settled and everything starts to flow. And then from that day, we didn't even go to any broker. Anytime we find a property and we really like it, we do our numbers, we contact this guy, and he does the numbers because he's got the entire portfolio of us. And he goes like, yeah, the numbers add up. Just let me know when you want to do settlement. And we just talk to our conveyancer, the lawyer. They just talk to each other. It's done. And we did about like 3 properties just like that. Mm. To a point whereby this guy was like, hey, guys, I need to learn from you. How do you do this? We are like, no, we don't know anything. You are the guy who actually processes all our loans.
And so how many properties at that point by then?
At that point, we were, I think, 7 or 8.
Eight. And so it was fast. We were like, let's go for a drive. And then we just buy a property. Like, it's like, are we buying lollies or if the numbers stacked up? And then at that point, I was pursuing my overseas opportunity. And Moses said, okay, what do we want to achieve for our portfolio before we go overseas? And of course, I just throw out a number, 10. And so, you know, when you put it to the universe and you're going to work hard for it. So by the time I left for Dubai, we were at 10 properties, I would say.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for what's coming up after the break that describe the reason for pausing the property journey.
Being in Dubai has put the brakes on. It's hard to borrow and we've actually had to use brokers not even based in Australia because no one could help us.
The challenges that they have had to face during their property journey.
The other challenge, I think, managing these properties, obviously they are with agents. But from time to time, you find all sorts of agents, actually. You know, we found a situation whereby an agent never actually looked after the property.
The advice that they would provide themselves 10 years ago?
I would say be more ballsy. I'm probably the handbrake. And so make calculated risk and go, you know, like, you know, hand, head, foot deep.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Reflecting on the early advice received, Nakia contemplates the path to retirement through property ownership, weighing the options of leveraging rental income and property appreciation to secure a comfortable future.
I just was going to say one thing is that the advice that we were given at the start of the property journey was that, you know what, you get 4 properties fully paid off and you can retire. Okay. If you do the numbers, I don't know. If you say that, I don't know, at the time, rental fees were going for like, you know, a property on average, say between 400 and 500. If you get 4 of them, that is between $1,600 to $2,000 a week. If you take out your tax and everything, You'd be having enough money to live on with family and comfortably, you know, no issues, right? So in the back of our mind, we're actually thinking about that and saying like, you know, we want to talk about property. Okay, this is our goal. You want to be able to fully own, not mortgaged, own. They're under your name. No one comes to claim it. And you're getting your rental, and that's what's keeping you going. And you can retire and comfortably, you know, do that. So in our back of our mind, we're thinking like, you know what, getting up to 10 is nice, but you need to start to plan on how you're actually going to make sure that you know what you, because you cannot have all of them. Like, I know, because the amount of money you're talking about here is quite huge. So you're sort of talking about, you know what, how do you leverage your work, because of course, you know, you're earning from your work and the rent that you're getting, how do you leverage that to try and pay off some of them? And I guess that's the goal. The goal is to try and to leverage, pay some of them off. And then once you pay some of them off, maybe some of them you might need to sell them, because, you know, some of them are not performing as well as others. So you might need to look at what are those non-performing properties and how do you handle them, you know. Very interesting, actually. Back to Queensland's thing. Property prices were much lower than New South Wales, Victoria, right?
That's right.
But what has happened is, since then, I was actually looking at the numbers just last week. Not last week, actually. I started to look at it at the start of the year. But coming up to last week, if you look at the numbers, Queensland overall, okay, the numbers have actually gone up. Those $200,000 properties are right now at about $350,000, $400,000. And in some areas, depending on which area, they're actually up to $500,000. Okay? So looking at them, like, you're thinking like, hang on, if they've appreciated this much, if you sell them now, then, because if you think about the loan that maybe if you bought it at 200 and, you know, say 7-8 years ago, the loan amount will be in the 100s, you know. But if the property is now worth, say, 400, or anywhere, 350, 400, that's a very, very good appreciation. So you're thinking like, you know what, and if you're getting the rent, all right, you're thinking like, all right, do I sell this property or do I just hold on to it and keep on, you know, having that appreciation? You know, it starts to become that debate. And yes, possible, you can actually maybe sell that property or keep it and use another property that is maybe not performing to pay off that loan, and then now you can actually keep it. So again, property actually appreciates.
Navigating the tumultuous waves of the stock market taught Nakia the invaluable lesson of stability and long-lasting growth found in property investments, where the winds of fortune blow with a steadier hand.
The beauty about property, and just one of the questions actually I saw in that kind of guideline was around, you know, what, have you ever tried to invest other places? I did. I'll tell you, I did share trading early, you know, just before the financial crash in 2007, 2008. And I lost a lot of money. I did lose a lot of money. But one of the things I learned at the time was that with share markets, you know, you have to be on every day. You know, you have to. Actually, I used to do it. I wake up every morning, I'm looking at the share market. So if I'm seeing like the Dow Jones has lost overnight, it means in Australia, ASX is going to be selling off the next day. So I need to be the first one either to sell off the early morning, all right? Because by the end of the day, you'll find that the numbers were just like, you're losing about maybe 3,000-4,000 during that day out of, because the share market somewhere just lost, maybe the Dow Jones or the FTSE 100 went down, or the, you know, the Japanese one went down, and, you know, something happens somewhere and something just goes down. And I was actually losing money like that. And I said, you know, it's different. With property, even if, you know, we talk about property prices going down, essentially, if you actually look at the numbers, they actually don't really go down. unless you actually sell it. Unless you actually sell it on that day when they're saying, like, you know what, the property prices dropped 1% or 2%, but what is that compared to, you know, let's say your property is worth 700,000. 1% of 700,000, how much is that? A couple of $1,000?
Yeah, 7,000. Why would you sell?
Exactly. So you just hold on to that. You just hold on to that. And over a period of time, you know, we know that property in Australia is generally, and this is just a general term, is that it doubles every 10 years. So if you hold on something for 10 years, you can look at. And again, going back to southwestern Sydney, whereby properties were going 350, 500 square meter land, four-bedroom house, 380 that time. Right now, those houses are 1.2, 1.3 million.
Navigating the complexities of international finance, they find themselves facing obstacles in borrowing and investing while based in Dubai, promoting strategic adjustments to manage their financial goals.
Being in Dubai has put the brakes on. It's hard to borrow, and we've actually had to use brokers not even based in Australia because no one could help us. We went through like four different brokers direct with banks, and they could not refinance our loans when interest rates were skyrocketing. We ended up using an Aussie based in Singapore and was able to assist. But from a buying capacity, it's just been put on hold because, I don't know, they don't recognize our earnings. The dirhams doesn't look very favorable when we're trying to borrow.
Wow, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you know, Australian banks consider, you know, the US dollar. If you earn in USD or Singapore. British pound.
You're so much higher though.
They consider those currencies, but anything other than that, it's very, 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 very hard. Like, you really need to get a broker or somebody that really understands, you know, the situation to be able to do the conversions and be able to get you a loan. So currently, we've actually taken it a little bit slow.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah. The advantage of what you're doing is your earning capacity is great. So you could use that cash if you wish to pay down your loans and therefore reduce your debt. And then, you know, you have nice cash flow coming through. So it's very positive in the position you're in.
Yeah, so the journey is just a little bit different. We would love to buy again. We're like I said, it becomes a drug. Like when we were going that fast, and like I said, I throw a number up in the air and then we get it. Like it's quite exhilarating. But for now, without being able to buy now, it's one of those things and trying to think about what do we do with that extra ability of earning in Dubai. And how we can, potentially bring down some loans and whatnot.
Amidst the perpetual challenges of property management and renovation, both navigate a tumultuous cycle, discerning the gems from the duds in their team of agents, brokers, and tradies.
Challenges are always there, right? With the journey, I think part of the challenge I think I spoke about is the financing part, okay? With the refinancing as well, sometimes can, you know, hit the brick wall when the interest rates are going up and it's taking you longer trying to find a bank that is willing to actually refinance your loan. That's the biggest challenge because you can, we actually do the numbers and the savings that we can actually make by refinancing because of our portfolio is slightly big. So the numbers actually are staggering when you come to, you know, interest rate hikes and stuff. You know, any reserves that you have, it just gets depleted just within a couple months. Okay. But that's one of the challenges. The other challenge, managing these properties, obviously they are with agents. But from time to time, you find all sorts of agents actually. Because, we found a situation whereby an agent never actually looked after the property.
Council rates for like 2 years.
It's 2-3 years. Eventually the council contacts you and they're like, you know, you have a hole and, you know, they're chasing up like things and you're like, hang on, how did this happen? And when you dig it up, you find like, you know what, you know, the agents are just being a bit lax and maybe there were some changes in the agency that they never told you, maybe they were sold off and things like that. So that has actually been quite challenging in that aspect, you know, the managing of the property. However, we do have some great agents that actually manage some of the properties whereby, you know that this agent is on top of everything and you're not never ever worried about like, you know, what's happening. But there's a few that we have to follow up from time to time to try and find out. The other things, some challenges are around, we found that again, it's also around the management of these properties, right? Whereby there's the agency managing it. You have your tenants, all right? And over time, obviously, these properties need repairs. They need, these kind of things. But we've had situations whereby we've had to renovate some of the properties. And obviously, having gone to quite a number of these self-renovation classes.
You decided to do them yourself.
We've done a few of those. Some of the leading renovators here in Sydney, we've gone to some of their classes and gotten a few skills from them. So we decided to do some of them by ourselves. So we've actually gone and done an entire property, either... putting a brand new kitchen, painting the whole place, brand new bathroom, floors and everything. So we've done all that. And honestly, that's a very, very challenging time and very stressful, I would say, because especially when you are working with tradies, right? The tradies are obviously, it's you just have to look for the right one and, sometimes they come, sometimes they don't come, and then sometimes they just do all sorts of things, and it's very challenging, especially trying to manage them to actually deliver and get the quality of work that you actually need. Sometimes you are lucky, you actually get a really good tradie to help you do various things, your electrician, your plumber, your tiler, and all that kind of stuff. But in some cases, or your painter, but in some cases, you just get some dodgy ones that, honestly, I've had some really, really, really dodgy ones.
Nakia recounts the disheartening experience with a tradesman whose lack of professional and dedication underscored the importance of vetting and selecting reliable individuals for their property projects.
You find that, is it Airtasker?
Yeah.
Where you put in your job and then somebody just say, yeah, I can do it. I've had a situation whereby somebody came, honestly, this guy... He may have been a tradie, but he's a guy who's just wasted his life, and all that he wanted is money to go and buy some cigarettes and some alcohol. He comes in with his tools and everything, but after, an hour, he's like, hey, I'm going to get a break. Man, the guy disappears, comes back, and you can smell alcohol in his breath and stuff. And it has happened. And, at one point I had to tell the guy, I'm sorry, I'm just going to pay you. Let's finish this. Thank you so much. you can't do this. So you get all these challenges, but it's part of the experience, right? Mm. It's part of the experience, and you learn from it, and also it helps you identify, people or companies or that you can actually work with. Okay, I look at it and I'm saying, it's actually a good experience. You get exposed. And eventually, you actually have a line of teams and people.
Yeah, agents, brokers, tradies,
And the good thing, actually, with this experience, straight away, like a broker will come and start to tell my stuff. And I'm like, dude, I don't think you know your stuff. I'm sorry. Actually, we've actually had to tell some of them that. Like, I'm sorry, we don't think you know what you're doing. You're struggling. If I can already tell that you're struggling, I don't think you can help me. So it actually helps us to, knock out, get rid of people we don't think that are going to be very helpful in our journey.
Reflecting on the journey, Lopez acknowledges her tendency to be cautious, wishing she had been more daring, while Nakia emphasized the importance of embracing boldness in their property investment endeavors, despite contentment with their current achievements.
For me, I would say be more ballsy. I'm probably the handbrake. And so make calculated risk and go, hand, head, foot deep. Be a little bit more ballsy because I am still the handbrake.
I'm like, go. And she's like, oh, no, let's not do that. I think, 10 years ago, I would be saying, in the hindsight, actually, you look at it and you're like, there's a lot of things that I would have done. But at the same time, you're like, 10 years ago, I would have said, let's be more open and, you know, again, go full throttle without holding, because I think maybe that can take us far, but still, we're quite happy where we are right now.
Yeah.
Very, very happy where we are right now.
Well, one last question for you is, how much of your success do you think has been due to intelligence, hard work, and skill, or how much do you think has been due to luck?
I don't know.
Okay. So if you ask me, I think from my perspective, it's all been hard work.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think there's, of course, you know, in life, there's luck, of course. You can't discount that.
But lucky properties or good properties.
Yeah. And in some cases, we missed out actually some properties, which we were thinking like, we should have locked this one in, but for some reason we missed it out. And I'm still, there's a property that even up to now, I still, you know, beat myself why I didn't get it. I still beat myself why I didn't get it. It was those ones like you go like, oh yeah, the market is a bit slow, you know, I don't know. But later on, I knew deep down, I knew that we need to get this. But I was more like, you know, like, okay, let's see. But of course, with time, you find that, you know, you miss that opportunity. Actually, there's a book, it's called The Richest Man in Babylon. It's a very ancient book. I don't know whether you've heard about it. It's about personal finance and stuff. There's a story in there. It's a parable, rather, which talks about the this guy who's selling some animals, some stock at the gate of Babylon, right? You know, it's late evening, and he says to this other guy, like, hey, you know, you can buy my stock. And the guy is like, nah, man, it's a little bit late, you know. I can't see them properly. I don't know how they look like, you know. And then he goes like, oh, you know what? Why don't we catch up in the morning and then I'll, you know, have a good view of what you've got and then I'll buy it. He goes and then some other guy just comes and buys it off. So in the morning when this guy comes back, he's like, no, I sold it off. And then later on when he's actually seen what was sold off, he's like, I was foolish. I should have bought that. So I always look at that and I'm like, you know, when the opportunity is there, take it. You don't have to think twice.
Yeah, so hard work, absolutely, but then follow your gut as well. And I'm a big gut person, like I listen to that. So I think, but then when you've got two people right and then someone who's the handbrake, like it plays on that. Like he would go 100%, 110, and I'm like still holding at 80%. So it's that finding that middle ground. And with me, you just need to massage the idea and it takes time, whereas he's ready to go right away. So hard work, not so much luck, but getting educated, that's probably the...
Yeah, educated, it's very, very, very... I think for us, that's one of the biggest things, getting educated and knowing what do you need to do to be able to get to this, to that. And, you know, providing that advice to people who are actually new in the investment, property investment area, and saying that, you know, you need to look out for this and that. And so that education is very, very important. But also with education comes with experience, right? You go through these things and then experience checks in and all these things. I think they're all building blocks, right? Right? They build onto something that, you know, you're a position of having control of what's actually happening around and you continue building on that.
Thank you to Jeanette and Moses, our guests on this episode of Property Investory.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.